truly been interesting, and I'm actually grateful to our previous speakers, because I think what I'd like to do is try to take some of what the previous speakers have talked about in terms of kind of national data and national policy, and talk about kind of how I see that playing out on a state level. And just as a point of context, I think it was Norm that mentioned that MAD had released report cards to the state. And in 2002, Massachusetts got a D-. And I said to Ralph, that was before I was the director. But, you know, I think it gives you some context in terms of kind of what some of these challenges are. And I do think that, particularly on a state level, kind of my job, in essence, is to really look at how we take very kind of disparate groups, both from the legal and legislative perspective, how we work with some of our partner state agencies, to really kind of drive kind of what we think is kind of coherent policy at the state level. So as a framework for this, you know, I just want to do a little bit on use and consequence data in Massachusetts, kind of a little brief overview on legal and legislative issues, particularly some changes. Talk a little bit about practice changes. I think we heard in terms of brief interventions as a policy and practice change where that's really been underutilized. And really talk about advocacy and leadership, what's been happening in Massachusetts, what I think has been some promising issues, as well as I think some challenges at both the state and the federal level. This is a National Survey on Drug Use and Health data, and again, I think our statistics are no different. You know, I do, as a context for this, Massachusetts has some of the highest use rates of alcohol across all age groups, and although we have seen some declines over the past few years, we still remain above the, significantly above the national average. And so here you see 12 to 17-year-olds, this is past month binge drinking and perception of risk from binge drinking, and that's a 12 to 17-year-old range. As we already talked about, you know, that significantly jumps up in the 18 to 25-year-old range. And you'll see this is the 2003 and 4 survey compared to 2005. And the 26 plus year old age group. Here's alcohol abuse and dependence again from the national survey data. And you'll see, you know, really just a modest, a little bit less than the national average in 12 to 17 year olds and above in the 18 to 25-year-olds. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of recent legal and legislative issues, and this is where I think Massachusetts really scored pretty badly in terms of the last changes. But we have seen, and really, you know, I really do, Ralph Hinkson, who was in Massachusetts for a long, long time, really was a major driver in some of these legislative changes that we see. But some recent changes in the per se law in terms of using blood alcohol count as kind of valid evidentiary evidence. We just had a passage, it's called Melanie's Bill, enhanced sanctions for repeat offenders as well as interlock ignition devices. Passage just recently of the primary seatbelt law, as well as a Rosie D. lawsuit. This was a lawsuit brought against MassHealth as it relates to EPSDT. So as of January, all Medicaid-eligible adolescents, children who will be receiving services, have to receive screening for a wide variety of chronic conditions, including substance use. So there's really been some changes, as well as some movement. I think that we just had an administrative change or an administration change in Massachusetts from a Republican administration to a Democratic administration. And I think some things that were off the table previously are now back on the table in terms of legislative changes. We've had a bill circulating in our legislature for years and years around alcohol taxes. I'll talk a little bit more about that, and around youth possession that we're seeing some movement on, as well as some movement around alcohol advertising, particularly state-sponsored alcohol advertising. And, you know, we were talking about this previously in terms of alcohol taxes as it relates to price-sensitive youth and young adults. Massachusetts is the ranks very low in terms of alcohol taxes, the 12th lowest overall. those taxes, and particularly beer taxes, have not been raised since 1976, and obviously a direct correlation between youth binge drinking and alcohol taxes. And was there one more after that? Oops. But in the paper presentation, I put this in because there's a chart that I really love. Particularly, you know, I always say that 50% of my job is kind of marketing what I do to administration. And there is a very compelling chart that looks at state alcohol taxes as it relates to binge drinking for 18 to 20 year olds. And there's obviously a direct correlation between lower taxes and increased binge drinking. Just some select consequence data. Alcohol still remains the primary drug reported among treatment admissions. Alcohol involved drivers in fatal crashes and alcohol and fatal motor vehicle crashes. One of the areas that I think we really have been spending a lot of time in Massachusetts has really been looking at practice changes. And clearly, you know, we know a lot of risky drinkers are not intersect in other parts of service systems, particularly as it relates to primary health care. So one of the areas we've been spending some significant time on is screening, brief intervention, or referral to treatment. So how do we particularly intersect with our courts, with our primary care systems, with our emergency departments in terms of identifying and intervene with those folks who are exhibiting risky behavior? It was in 2005, Massachusetts released a strategic plan for substance abuse services in the Commonwealth, and it was one of the six areas, prime areas of focus. Clearly, the Institute of Medicine report, Closing the Quality Chasm, I think has talked about universal screening for substance use issues. Very happy to say, just so you know, spirit of full disclosure, Anne Mahoney's my project officer, so if I throw her a few compliments, I think you'll understand. we do have a fairly robust federal screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, and I want to acknowledge Karen Pressman, who is our lead on that, and Mary Brolin, who is actually our evaluator for that project. This is a project with Boston Medical Center looking at the implementation of screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment in a wide variety of health arenas in the emergency department, in some of their community health centers, as well as their primary care clinics, as well as three college grants looking at screening and brief intervention. We also have a project obviously acknowledging, kind of looking at kind of consequence data. We actually have a project with Judith and Ed Bernstein, also of with BU Medical Center. And so we're actually doing screening brief intervention in 12 emergency departments in Massachusetts. We are now launching community health centers. We're working with 32 health centers in Massachusetts to identify screening and brief intervention practices for adolescents and women of childbearing age. And I think, you know, part of what we talk about is really, you know, I think one of the previous presenters was talking about expense of brief intervention services, and I think an immediate opportunity has been the Center for Medicaid and Medicare has passed codes to allow for billing. States still need to turn on these codes, but particularly as it relates to sustainability and billing, you know, that's the first question that you're asked at a state level, particularly for me, is who's going to pay for this? Advocacy and leadership, I just want to spend a lot of just kind of the final pieces talking about kind of what I think needs to happen at a state level, and I think some changes in Massachusetts that have really kind of moved, I think, some of these policy and legislative and legal issues. For about the past 4 years, we actually have a committee in our legislature, so we have a joint mental health and substance abuse committee. And I think what this has done is really kind of elevated substance use issues that were really relegated largely under kind of the umbrella of the healthcare committee, and has really allowed, I think, for us to have more of a direct relationship with the legislature to begin to talk about those kind of policy and service changes that we think are important. The other piece, and I think this is both an opportunity and a challenge, we actually, when we released our strategic plan, the first piece was looking at the Governor's Interagency Council on Substance Abuse and Prevention. And this is basically any state-level agency that has anything to do with substance use, which is chiefly all of them, to really look at enhanced collaboration and cooperation as it relates to kind of strategic deployment of funding, and also looking at those policy issues. You know, I will say kind of I think it's my biggest challenge at the state level, and I think it's also true at the federal level, is when you think about funding for a lot of these services, particularly on the prevention end, that those the funding for these come from various sources, whether it's our federal substance abuse block grant or UDL dollars through the Department of Justice or the Safe and Drug-Free Drug-Free Communities money, Safe and Drug-Free Schools money for the Department of Education. And I think part of our challenge is at a state level that and close your ears, that I think hasn't happened at a federal level, is how do we coordinate all of those state dollars and focus them based on what we know to be kind of good epidemiological information to those who need it most. And I think that's what we try to do at a state level. Clearly, I think we're seeing increased advocacy around alcohol advertising. I'd be interested to see if we're seeing an increase in spirits, largely as it relates to kind of marketing of spirits, particularly to young women. We were talking about that at a previous meeting. One of the other things, and I think Ralph is going to talk about this too, there's been some federal legislation, the STOP Act, that is really going to look at in very similar ways to the MAD report at giving some report cards to the state. So I think we're going to use that as an opportunity. One of the particular challenges, I think, at a state level is how do we get traction for drinking-related issues? And I think there's a sense of kind of universal denial at the magnitude of alcohol use. And I think particularly our challenge in Massachusetts and in the Northeast is that we have such, we've had such a huge increase in heroin and prescription drug-related fatal and non-fatal overdoses that kind of at a community level, at a media level, and at a legislative level, kind of getting people refocused or focusing on alcohol has really been a challenge. And you know, I'll just give you one kind of real example of that. As Massachusetts legislature had an OxyContin commission, of which I was on, and you would hear parents kind of coming up and testifying, and parents would frequently say that, you know, I had no idea that my kid had a problem until the checkbook was, you know, that they raided the checking account or that they OD'd on prescription drug abuse. And then you'd have the kid come up, and the kid would talk about early tobacco use, early underage drinking, early problems, early arrest, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, what's our disconnect? And I think what we try to do is engage people. You know, it's that kind of harm reduction approach. So, you know, engaging folks at a community level or even a legislative level to talk about, yes, you know, this is a concern for us in terms of opioids, but we really have to keep and continually focus on alcohol and other drugs. I think the other piece in Massachusetts that's been significant and where we've seen some gains in terms of age of first use has really been around enhanced resources. You know, we did an inventory in FY03 of what the state was spending on substance use across all agencies. And of the $250 million that we were spending at the time, only 11% was spent on prevention-related services and only 3% on brief intervention services. And I would say that that probably holds true across most states. I think, you know, prevention and some of these other, they don't fit neatly into election cycles. And I think largely as we focus, you know, on treatment access, that, you know, continuing to make sure that we focus on drinking and problem drinking and risky drinking and the consequence information has always been a challenge for us at the state level. But I do think that we've had additional resources. We've been able to kind of continue to focus and spend some additional resources, particularly as it relates to public information campaigns around drinking. And I think that that has been kind of one of the areas that we've been able to kind of have some kind of continued programming for the past 3 years to really focus on that. So I think that...